Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, February 28th, 2021. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. And if you're really into this thing, I need you to go over to Apple Podcasts and give it a 5-star review. Let everybody know why you like it, because it makes me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. Because why wouldn't you want to share this podcast with people? Why would you want to keep it to yourself? Why would you want to be a Scrooge McDuck about it? What are you going to do? Dive off your fancy diving board into a bunch of MP3s? You can't even see MP3s. They're not even tactile. I mean, would you be diving into like some hard ass like phones or old iPods or Zunes? What are you going to do? Why don't you just share it? Spread some sunshine. Why don't you? And if you want to take it to your next level, if you want to take this obsession with my podcast to the next level, why don't you go over to patreon.com/mundanefestival, put in $3, pledge $3 a month, and you get hours and hours and hours of non-alt-right content. It's just fun stuff back there. Fun stuff behind the paywall. It's not even the stuff where it's like you kind of tiptoe around the alt-right racist stuff, where it's like you don't want to take a stance, but you're just kind of like teetering on the edge. Like you use codes like for black people, like Chicago and the hood or the inner city, or you just kind of teeter on the edge. Like you're funny, but then you just kind of, things didn't work out the way you thought they were going to work, and you're just kind of at a plateau, and you just kind of like you stick your toe in the water of the alt-right, of the quote-unquote conservative realm. There's none of that over on my Patreon. It's just stuff with me talking to people about stuff and things, and then it's me talking by myself about movies that I like. Columbus being one of them, the 2017 film directed by Koganada. I think that was the first episode in August of 2017. So there's 3 years of content back on the Patreon feed. All right. This is episode 489. I have a super special guest, theater artist and professional Derek Sanders, who is one of the founders of the August Wilson Monologue Competition. And I'm going to share that conversation with you in a bit. Right now, I want to talk about some things. This week has been pretty good. I've had some auditions. I got a PlayStation 5. Super excited about that. I talk about that on the Patreon episode on episode 488. If you want to know about that story, you can listen to that. What else happened to me? I bought a titanium extra long USB Type C cable from 7-Eleven. That tells you how good my life is going. Let me get some ginger ale, a Reese's peanut butter cup, and a USB Type C cable for my computer. Why don't I do that? You know, so I did that. That's pretty exciting. I wanted to talk about this, and this wouldn't be my podcast if I didn't talk about this Cam Newton situation. I know people have probably moved on from it, and I get it, but because I love black quarterbacks, I haven't given up. I haven't moved on. I want to say, so if you're not aware, there was this kid at this football camp, this 7-on-7 football camp. When Michael Felder was on, we talked about it. That, you know, Cam Newton has one, and one of his team, I don't know if it was actually his camp. It was a 7-on-7 camp, and Cam Newton was coaching one of the teams. This kid, high school kid, starts talking shit and about Cam Newton, saying that he was a free agent and he was quote unquote ass. And Cam Newton stoops to his level by saying, I'm rich. I didn't really appreciate that from Cam. I get it, Cam, because Cam could have, you know, well, I didn't appreciate that. But this kid was, he's being an asshole. And yes, kids make mistakes. Yes, they don't listen to authority sometimes and they fall short of what it is. But that kid's old enough to know that he shouldn't be disrespectful that way. And I watched and listened to a lot of these talking heads on ESPN, people that make money to talk about sports and all and everything. And one thing that they didn't say, I can say that more than one. One thing that they didn't say was that kid probably, you know what? That kid wouldn't say that to Drew Brees. He wouldn't say that to Mitch Trubisky, and he wouldn't say that to Matt Ryan, because those three guys are white, and he wouldn't say that to those dudes because there's probably a little more fear. But he chooses to say that to Cam Newton, who was a Heisman Trophy winner, a national championship winner, a number one overall pick, an NFL MVP, played in the Super Bowl, dragged that fucking team to the Super Bowl. All-time leader for the Panthers in passing yards and rushing and touchdowns with a fucking shitty ass team for the whole time he was playing there. But, you know, he's ass. Moving on. All right. That just really pissed me off. It's so disrespectful. And you have some people that try to say, oh, the little black kid, why are we crucifying? Fuck that kid. I hope he achieves his dreams and everything in the future, but fuck him a little bit. He's being a piece of shit. I know he apologized, but he's being a piece of shit. And if I was on Patreon, I'd call him something else. I just said out this wasn't a... But it makes me angry, man, to just be that disrespectful. And I just, nobody's perfect, but man, fuck that kid. I hope he achieves everything he dreams of. But still. All right. I want to get you to Derek. I want to get you to this conversation. So Derek Sanders is somebody that I met when I was about in my early 20s. He went during my time in Chicago, founder of one of the founders of the Congo Square Theater Company in Chicago. I love the work that they did there. I think, you know, when I was there, they did great work, and I'm sure they're continuing to do that. And I had the fortune, I was fortunate enough to understudy for this play called King of Coons by Michael Henry Brown. Oh my goodness. Michael Henry, I think it is. I just don't want to be wrong about that. It was Michael Henry Brown. And Harry Lennox was directing, and I got to sit in, and we talk about this, but so that was one thing. And he directed me in a show that I was doing, because at my school, which was the cool thing about Roosevelt, was that you got to work outside of the school and work on professional productions, and you just kind of integrate yourself into the theater community. And he was one of the Congo Square Theater Company was. These were people that I looked up to because they were black men and black women who really loved theater and who had credentials. They had, you know, professional training on the MFA level. And it was something that I could aspire to do. And it's something that as soon as I got to Chicago, I got to see black people doing it. Not only working at their theater company, but working in around the city and also working in TV and film. And it was just something to aspire to be. And, you know, I'm not trying to say like, oh my God, being black. And everybody knows what that's like if you're black and the struggle to do something in any field that you pursue. But I noticed, you know, in grad school, there were white students that were highly favored and they were given certain opportunities at these bigger theater companies, these white theater companies, and they were given opportunities that I wasn't given, and they were favored. But Congo Square, people like Derek helped fill in those where the school lacked. they filled in those holes and they filled in those colors and to help me grow as an artist. And I would say, and I didn't mention this on in our conversation because I don't think it came up. So this play, King of Coons, was basically about the life of Step and Fetch It. But it was the main character's name was Lincoln, about this guy, you know, like these black actors and performers had to walk in the back door back then. So people like me and other people that looked like me could walk in the front door now. And I remember why this actor, who is also like featured not as much as Derek in the Given Voice documentary, but he is in the one of the judges. And this guy, Anthony Irons, is a fucking amazing actor. And I was understudying him. And I was like, I hope he knows. Part of you as a young actor is like, I could do that. And I was looking at Anthony's work and I'm just like, I don't know if I could do that. And it's like, because you had to be this actor that said, I'm an actor and blah, blah, blah. Like the Lincoln actor where he was classically trained, but he had to be this coon. He had to be like Step and Fetch It. And I remember working with the AD, Sydney Chapman, who's also in the documentary. She was the AD at the time. And she was just like, it's so funny because it's like, I was like, how's my coon? And she was like, well, Chris, your coon's different. He's good, but he's different. But it's like, I hope Anthony never gets sick. And he never got sick. And I never went on. And looking back at it, thank God that he never got sick, because that dude was a fucking monster. And he's a great actor. And it was just kind of like I had to learn to just kind of wait my turn. And my ambition, I still do have a lot of ambition. I don't know if that I really talk about it that much or reveal that side of myself on the show. I don't know. But just it made me think back to just all the gifts that I was given by that Chicago theater community, the black one in particular, that made me feel welcome and that I did have a place. And it just made me more appreciative of the things that Derek provided. Cause he's like, you know, a lot of those dudes, like I'm 41 now and you don't really get to do August Wilson until you're in your 30s and 40s and on and beyond as a man. So I wasn't that, and those dudes were in their, like probably in their 30s by the time, you know, when I was there, and they were much older than me. But my type was that because I was a big guy, more in more shape back then than I am now, way more in shape, Jesus Christ. But those dudes, they had those dudes already. You know, that city had, you know, just kind of had those dudes. And I didn't, part of me realized that back then, but I don't think I realized it as much as in hindsight, I understand it a lot more. But they let me be around. Those guys, people like Derek, they let me be around, because you kind of think like I was doing this other play that he directed. So I probably can't use you at Congo, but I can use you in the show I'm directing. You know, he didn't blatantly say that to me, but that's what he did. So it just, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I talk so, I just think so highly, how do you say it? It's one of the reasons why I just dote on Chicago a lot and the theater community in a lot of ways, because it just taught me how to be, you know, and it was a city that just made me better and able to show what I could do and not be with all the insecurities that you have as a person, and even more so as an artist, to just get out there and fucking do it. So, yeah, without further ado, I'm super excited to share this conversation that I had with the great Derek Sanders.
Facebook is good for that, right? Just
yeah.
To be a casual kind of, I'm glad you're still alive, you know, hope you're doing well.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, it's been a long time, brother. You've made quite a journey for yourself.
Yeah, man. I was thinking about it. Like I had Aaron Todd Douglas on like a couple years ago, and I was just thinking about, sometimes I guess COVID, the pandemic, everything that's going on makes you think about your life decisions and whether you made the right ones. And it's kind of like, I'm like, did I do it? Part of me feels like I did all right. And I was thinking about like my journey in the arts. And I was thinking like, if it wasn't, there's some things that I didn't get from my grad experience as far as like yeah. in the Black department. And I felt like you guys filled that in. I don't know whether you guys knew it or not with Congo Square. You know, I was thinking about working at Impact and doing the play that we did together at ETA. It was really beneficial to me. And I guess I'm not trying to make you cry at the beginning of this show, but I was thinking about it, thank you, basically, you know?
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, you just do, you know, you give what you can, man. And I don't think, you know, I'm at the University of Illinois in Chicago now, and I'm a tenured mm-hmm. professor there.
Yeah.
And a couple things you said that were just poignant that I want to get to. But I mean, first and foremost, man, you don't need to thank me. You are part of the culture, part of the community, you know, yeah. and being part of the community, you know, when you see somebody out there going for something, mm-hmm. you give them what you can.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you yeah. were actually out there, one of the few who were out there and was like, I'm going to go out here and get it if I don't see it.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the only thing that has been useful in my life.
Yeah, because I was thinking about like one of the benefits, like I think when you're young, and maybe you can speak to this too, like when you're a young actor and you're thinking like, I'm going to be the next Denzel, I'm going to be Will Smith, I'm going to be whatever. And you think it's kind of like you kind of feel like you're self-absorbed in a lot of ways. And I know like my first year out there, I had a good first year and I was looking to stay out there in Chicago. And I've got this job. My listeners know I talk about it all the time, but I got this job working at the Skokie Park District and teaching like their Summer on Broadway program where you teach kids. And it just kind of changed me. And because you kind of think like it's you're going for self a lot. And then like working with kids is just like it made me a better actor. And that experience understudying for King of Coons. For me, like you as a young actor, like, man, I want to be on the stage. I want to be working. But then I watched Harry Lennox for 2 months. I got to sit in the room and watch him. And I stole all of his shit and taught kids with it. So,
absolutely,
you know, so, yeah.
Great artist still. Isn't that what they say?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and it wasn't a malicious thing, obviously, but it was just like, I use those tools and it helps.
I know comedians is a different code in terms of stealing.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that, yeah. we're not talking about that. We're yeah. talking about he inspired you. He not yeah. stole. You know, he inspired you. He said some things and then you repeat them and you learn to do it on your own. And I mean, you know, that's part of it, man. That's part of the opportunity that I think we tried to provide as Congo Squares. Like sometimes it's just important to be in the room.
Yeah.
You know I benefited from that from August. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like just sitting in a room and watching it happen and having access to that mm-hmm. Is an amazing thing. It's an amazing tool by itself. The grad school can't fill that in. You know, yeah. nobody can fill that in. But you sitting in a room and actually watching people do it is another level.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
How have you been? I want to get to August. I want to get to Chad a little bit too, but I want to just start about like, first of all, how are you doing in all of this? How has your life changed in the pandemic since the pandemic in the last year?
Well, I mean, you know, it's been a lot for me to catch up on. Mm-hmm. You know, I appreciated the pause on some ways. Because yeah. there's a lot of stuff that I needed to catch up on. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? It's like even with my home life and, you know, and also I need to reconfigure my career and make some decisions, some real hard decisions there, mm-hmm. you know? And I think I started that process already. I am in a place where everybody's in a pause. Let me go ahead and try to catch up. You know what
sure,
I mean?
Sure, yeah, yeah.
To myself, mm-hmm. to myself, my expectations of myself, right? Chad passed, you know, halfway through this thing. Mm-hmm. And that set me back, just because we were really, you know, Chad was one of my good friends, one of my closest friends. Right.
Yeah.
And, it's just so unexpected, you know, but you know, out of it, I've found some more resolve. I found some more focus. I've been inspired by my brother, who already was inspiring me. But I've been good. But, you know, I'm a Cancer, man. And we kind of got, you know, we get, if our home life is good, you know what I'm saying? We get in the shell and we be good. I miss being in the room making it happen.
Yeah, yeah.
I miss that, man. It is where I think I'm the best.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the best in the rehearsal room. I'm the best, you know what I'm saying, one-on-one making it happen, you know, on film sets, you know what I'm saying, mm-hmm. actually being in there. I think I'm at my best there, you know. And, you know, maybe people disagree with me, but I believe I'm at my best. So that matters a lot.
What I appreciate, what made me, like, even – this has been a long time coming, but to ask you to come on and do this, but when I watched Giving Voice and I watched you in the room with Cody Meredith, and I was like, yeah, that's Derek. There's no bullshit. That's Derek. And I was like, and then I said to myself, why wasn't Derek as nice to me as he was with Cody? No, I'm just joking.
That's perception, brother.
No. I knew, you know, when we did that, I'm not going to name the play, but when we did that play together, I even though I was like 23, 24, I knew what you were doing. I knew the job that you had to do with that show. And I knew, like, I don't know if you remember, but it was some of the actors weren't as one of the actors wasn't as experienced as the rest of us. And you were pushing me to pick up the slack and do it. Like, so I knew, like, and cause you were like, I just treated you like you were a coach, you know, like, you know, just a coach trying to.
Yeah. A lot of people, describe my experience of that is like it being with me is like being a coach, you know, mm-hmm. because I mean, I have a vision, that we're all aiming for together. And what I'm trying to get to is not, I'm trying to surprise myself. And at the end of it, I want all of us try to surprise ourselves. It's not good enough for me to be, oh, that was good, you mm-hmm. know, or that was quality. I know, you know, August used to say, you know, you can work below your level.
Mm.
You know, you can work at your level. The question is, can you work above your level?
Yeah.
And I am always pushing the people around me for inspiration and pushing myself to constantly, no matter where I am, ETA, off-Broadway, doing King Haley, to work above my level. I'm always trying to push myself to work above where I think I can push myself to work above. And if I get to push myself to work above, I want everybody else to feel like we all are going to work above. And then we'll see what we got, you know? Yeah. And typically, sometimes you exceed your expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you land right at it.
Yeah.
But I found very few times that I go below my expectations.
Yeah.
When I always aim above them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Shoot for the stars, mm-hmm. shoot for the moon. And even if you miss, you'll be amongst the stars.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of my stuff is like you treat you like a coach is kind of like, man, you know, if you want to get it, let's get it.
Yeah.
Let's not play, dog.
Right.
Because ain't nobody out there playing, you know?
Yeah.
And the people who want it, who really want it, guess mm-hmm. what? They go out and get it.
Yeah. You know? Cause I was like, I know what he's doing. And I just gotta live. I could just have to, you know, do my part. Yeah.
And I think in universities too, we have a bad habit of just wanting to be liked. You know what I'm saying? A lot of instructors just be like, they actually think that you're not going to be anything. And they're just like, you know, it's good enough.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not causing any drama. He likes me at the end. My evaluations are good, you know, and to me, that's not good enough because when I was an undergrad, you know, people, you know, was like good enough and good enough, you know, being. And then I learned in grad school, a guy who was like, the thing you have to hate is mediocrity, mm-hmm. because he said, people will tell you if you're really great at what you do. People will tell you if you are bad at what you do, right? So let's say if you're bad at what you do, if you're good at what you do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's all of this.
Yeah.
Well, they'll say nothing. They won't say anything.
Right.
You know? And I was like, man, if I'm aiming for this and I fall from this sometimes, you know, that's better than them saying nothing, you know? And I get frustrated with myself sometimes, you know, I get frustrated with myself because I think I'm in a, you know, in a category that I shouldn't be at yet, you know what I'm saying? And, and just frustrated with myself with mediocrity. And, I'm doing the thing that I hope that somebody would do for me.
Yeah. You know? Well, where did that start for you? Are you from Virginia?
Originally. Yeah.
What part?
Bad news.
My uncle's down there now. My mom is from Virginia, like close to, oh God, I think it's like Cascade, Virginia. It's like closer to North Carolina. It's a little further south.
Okay.
To the North Carolina line. Yeah. And they're from North Carolina and everything. But yeah, so what was it like for you growing up? Like, were you always into theater and stuff when you were a kid or?
No, I mean, I found theater, I mean, technically when I was in high school.
Okay. Right?
And I found that I was good at it and passionate about it in high school. Right.
Okay.
Before that, you know, I did a couple plays when I was in elementary, maybe, or something like that. But that's when I really, and then my, high school drama teacher was no joke, bruh.
Where'd you go to high school?
I mean, Warwick.
Okay.
Warwick High School.
Okay. I don't think I knew you. I don't want to ask how old you are. If you were close, Mike Tomlin, I think went to Denby. My cousin graduated from Denby. Mike Tomlin, the Steelers football coach.
Oh, yeah. He graduated what year?
I think he might be mid-40s, I think.
We would have been around the same time.
Okay.
I never met him, though. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I never met him. It would have been Mike Tomlin. Okay. He would have been above me.
Okay.
Right? It would have been Mike Tomlin. It would have been Bubba Chuck.
Okay,
Allen Iverson. You know, who else was in school during that time? But those areas, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So Mike, Bubba Chuck would be under me, which was, he went to Bethel, you know? Yeah.
And Mike Vick would have been, Mike Vick, I just turned 41 today. Yeah, after you.
Yeah. Oh, happy birthday, bro. Yeah,
thanks,
I was meant to say that. Happy birthday.
It's all good. It's all good.
It's an honor. It's
yeah.
an honor that I'll be, you know, 41, right?
Yeah.
Good deal, man. Yep. But, so I'm around that era. I'm around that era.
Okay. Yeah. That's what's up. And your teacher was no joke in high school.
Yeah. No joke. That's what I was going for. some would consider abuse now.
I
remember we did Raising in the Sun, and she was she's a preacher or whatever. But I remember we were doing Raising in the Sun. And you remember that part where Benita gets slapped by Mama?
Yes, yeah.
Right? I'll never forget. I was sitting in there, and I was playing Walter Lee. And I was sitting in this thing, and then she was like, "You, there is God in my house, right?"
Yeah.
And then the girl, like, did a little hit, right? And then she was like, "No, do it again.
Oh, no.
And then she was like, "There is God in my house." And then she did it a little harder. She was like, "No, do it again." She's like, "There is God in my house. Whack!
Wow.
There is God in my house. Whack!" And I was like, "Oh shit!" You know what I'm saying? But that's the pop from then on. Now can't do that nowadays, right?
No.
But what I learned from that is that there is a bar of excellence. It is serious shit. You know what I mean? And that bar. That bar, you know, translates, reverberates in the theater, right?
Yeah.
If it's hit right, right? Not so much the actual contact, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But the energy that it took to take that point seriously is what I took away from it, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of it, she had a higher bar, you know, than most people. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I was always kind of aiming for that bar. That's back when I was an actor, you know, And then I transitioned to directing, you know?
Well, I saw my first year in Chicago, fall of 2002, you guys were doing a soldier's play. You were Peters. Was it Peterson the name?
Yeah.
And that was that. Where was that? Was off like Belmont or something, right? Where was that? I can't think of what the
that
name
was I think they called it 773 at the end theater, but what did they call that?
Because it was right off the stop, and I was trying to look it up, but I didn't remember. I just knew.
I can't remember the name of it either. Yeah. It was a complex with like three or four theaters.
And it was a great show. And that was, you know, for me, it just solidified my decision of coming to Chicago and going to grad school, because it's like, okay, these are Black dudes that are older than me. They're working professionals. A bunch of them went to like, they were trained and they got their MFA. So I was like, okay, I'm in the right place. Like I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. So I could just kind of look to you guys as like, you know, people that I was like, okay, it can be done. It's not necessarily about the fame. It's just like, you can work. If you work hard, you can work in the industry and be somebody that has something to offer. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was the last time I think I acted.
Oh, wow. Okay.
mostly because it started to become cumbersome. Okay. Right? And what I mean by that, I would have people when, you know, acting is a very, you know, personal thing. You know what I mean? You have to, you know, it takes a minute for me to kind of connect to all the things that I need to connect to before I go in.
Right.
And I just finding hard things. It was like people coming up to me just before I go upstage and say, hey, Derek, such and such comps aren't in, you know,
oh my
what
God.
Should I do? And I'd be like, I'm about to go on, you know, or hey, Derek, can I talk to you about my check? I don't believe it was. I was like, you know, and it just the producing started to taint the acting part. You know what I mean? Because we hadn't gotten to the part. So I was like, you know, at this point in my career, you know, what's more important? I say I find it easier to direct and produce than act and produce, you know. So, you know, I was, and when I started directing, I was directing by then. But I realized that I was just as fulfilled seeing Chris out there making it happen as if I was up there.
Yeah.
And that was the switch for me. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, you know, technically he's doing it and I'm happy for him that he's out there doing it.
Yeah.
And I had a hand in it, you know, and I'm okay with that. It doesn't actually have to be me.
Right, right.
It could be somebody else and I could be satisfied.
Talk about, I guess I want to get your thoughts on this. And I want to just kind of briefly talk about like my story or just have the conversation that I had with some actor friends. I want your thoughts on educational theater with regards to, because I think it's a, and then maybe we eventually get to giving voices and stuff like that. But I was thinking about my career and stuff, and I was thinking like getting into grad school where I feel like I didn't have as much help in undergrad. My professor was just like, go to Chicago. And that was it. Cause he had went to Northwestern and got his PhD. And I was thinking about my monologue selection. And I said, damn, I wish I'd have had more help with that. Cause for me, when I was in college, my sophomore year, I think I really started finding out about August Wilson and really started to like take everything in and just say, okay, this guy sounds like my uncle. This guy sounds like my dad. This is Blackness. This is, because prior to that, it's just been, I was in Bye Bye Birdie. I was the lead in that, you know, high school stuff. You're doing Importance of Being Earnest. You're doing first year in college, The Misanthrope, some Molière, but never anything Black. And when I discovered August Wilson, it was like a whole portal opened. But when I start auditioning for grad school, I was like, oh, I should have did my contemporary piece should have been Sterling or from Two Trains Running instead of something I found in a monologue book. I don't even want to admit to you what it that shit was. But my classical was like Merry Wives of Windsor, and that was fine. Ford from Merry Wives, and the contemporary was like, I shouldn't have did that. And I was like, damn, if somebody would have said, hey, Chris, you're black, you might want to think about Sterling. You might want to think about Levy. You might want to think about, did you, like, I don't know. I was like, I feel like I'd be talking to you from a bigger house if somebody had kicked me in the ass on that. I don't know.
I didn't
go to an HBC. I went to a PWI, an undergrad.
Yeah. I mean, that's tricky, right?
Yeah.
Because the truth is that they don't know. They only know from their perspective, right? Mm-hmm. What I try and encourage my students is that do something that's close to you.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you what's close to you. Only you know what's close to you.
Right.
Only you can go out and read the plays and go, you know what? I know this. I know this in my spirit.
Yeah.
And when you choose that, then you chose right.
Mm-hmm.
And you can build on that for the rest of your life if you find a great one, right?
Right.
Now, choosing something black, you know, I don't know if it's necessarily good for a white professor to tell you just simply to take a black piece. You know, I might send it to one of the black or Latino, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
maybe you should find something that's, you know, maybe stop trying to be like them and do you the best you can do you. Mm-hmm. Do you.
Yeah.
You know? I'm sure you discovered that with comedy. You know, I can only imagine that the only way you're going to get really good is if you do you the best you can do you, then nobody can copy that.
Right.
You know,
right.
Even if they tell the same joke, they can't tell it like you, you know, because you deliver you. But, you know, early on, I try to invest in them that you are selling you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they're buying this often. I find students are buying this idea of what they think they should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, you are the business. You are the product. You are ultimately taking your life and your what you call them and say, I'm going to sell myself as a product. And what does that mean? And are you really willing to do that?
Yeah.
You know, and that's the hard question or hard answer that a lot of us a lot of actors have to face, because some of them want the fame, but they don't want to share themselves.
That's fair.
Be a dentist. Dentists don't have to share anything about themselves.
Yeah.
You know? But if you're going to be honest and you're going to go out there and you go, hey, I'm not the sexiest man alive. You know what I'm saying? So that means I can't sell that. You know what I'm saying? So what is the only thing that I can sell? And that is my experience, my point of view, and me. So I gotta hone that to, even if you were doing Ford for Mary Wise and Windsor, it is your Ford.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I don't think we doubled down on that enough, you know? And it was like, look, there are certain things you could do. Iambic pentameter. There are certain things you could write your beats. You could figure that stuff out. But the magic is how you see it.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt like I did enough to get in somewhere, but I just felt like I didn't have enough. Like my professor didn't really help. Like he signed off on stuff. Like I auditioned at Yale, which was like, I did the Erdas and I got Roosevelt from that. And they didn't pass me on the first round. So I just did like a 1 minute monologue or something, but I went to Yale. And they said, why do you want to come here? And I said, well, you guys are the best and I want to work with the best. And they said, well, most people wait till they're a little older. And I said, well, I know what I want to do. So I want to, you know, I was 22 and they were like, okay. And then I obviously didn't get it. And, so I was just kind of like,
I think they say that to everybody.
Yeah.
I think they say that to me. Right.
And there's people that come in, like I was talking to some MFA actors a couple of days ago in Clubhouse, and they were just saying like, well, you know, I just try to do different because I don't want to do August Wilson. Because August Wilson, his stuff 15, 18 years ago isn't as like, I guess, mainstream as it is now to a certain degree. And so these folks were, I think they in the late, the mid to early aughts, like maybe 2010s, they were auditioning. So maybe he's more ubiquitous now than he was like 15, 20 years ago. But like, I was just kind of thinking like, I should have just leaned into that a little more. I should have, I don't know.
That's interesting that you mentioned that, man. It's like, because I found that we are in a place where it's like Latinx, black and brown people.
Mm-hmm.
Like 10 years ago, they didn't even consider August Wilson a classic.
Right.
And now you're saying, oh, I don't want to do that old stuff. I want to do the new stuff. It's like, they just started doing this stuff.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah, yeah.
What are you talking about?
Right.
Do you think Shakespeare would be who he is if they said, I don't want to do Shakespeare. He's old.
Yeah.
But it's something about our culture that wants to throw away our stuff. Mm-hmm. And it has to be the people who say, we see the long vision. You got to learn this because this is our classic. And if you can't do this, then why are you learning Shakespeare? You know, yeah. What I'm saying? What are you trying to prove?
Right.
What are you trying to prove? Because the majority, if you want to be honest, the majority of the world does not watch Shakespeare.
No, they don't. No.
Right?
No, they don't.
The majority of the world don't watch theater, right? But, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? So why wouldn't you treat your experiences or something that's similar to that or blah, 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 like it's gold? Because we want to throw away our stuff. And it was like, oh, yeah. I had one student say, you say, yeah, just y'all do stuff that's Latin, but then it's real Latin. I go,
what?
What do you mean? It's like, it's extra Latin. And I go, there's Latin directors on them. You know what I'm saying? So what you mean? It was just like, yeah, it's just be so Latin. And I was like, are you concerned with impressing white folks? Is that what you're saying? I said, I am not concerned with that. You're talking to the wrong person.
Mm-hmm.
Because we got this far, you know, just to stop for a second. And I was like, especially in the brown community, I'm kind of like, they still don't really respect the artistry of a Pena, you know what I'm saying? Or, you know, say they really haven't got a classic writer, maybe Lorca, you know what I'm saying? That's on August Wilson level. They really don't, not a contemporary one, right? So y'all should still be fighting for telling your stories, any stories. Not necessarily white approval stories.
Yeah, yeah.
And I get that you want to compete because hell, who wants to be in anything and not compete with the best? Like you said, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You're the best. I want to be there with the best. You know what I mean? Who doesn't want to compete with the best? But they also don't give up who they are.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I'm wondering what is up with that. Well, young people should be like, I don't want to do August Wilson. Because there ain't really many roles there for you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Chris, you just coming into the August.
That's exactly. Season, right? That's what.
Just now.
I just, like, before the pandemic happened, I was in previews on a Broadway show, the Lehman Trilogy. And it was just like a small part, but I made it. You know, I made Broadway. And I was like, okay, now I can be equity. And now I can do an August Wilson play in Minnesota. I can do it. I can do these roles now because back then I didn't realize it then, but like I wasn't old enough at 25 to do. No. I wasn't old enough. No. And
it doesn't really start till you get 40, to be honest. It's like 35. That's most of the characters of that. You know what I'm saying? You got Corey.
Yeah. I did audition for that. And when they did it at the court, because I was a reader and I got to read against every black actor in Chicago, and they asked me to understudy, but I couldn't because I think I had booked a gig, you know, or something.
And they often even go older with Corey.
Yeah. You know, they do. Yeah. Like Chris Chalk when he did it on Broadway. Yeah.
Yeah. He was like almost 30, wasn't he?
Probably. Yeah.
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 He was late 20s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He was mid to late 20s, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I just think it's part of the game. And, you know, they don't know what they don't know. You know what I mean? And I can only give them the perception, you know, I can only offer you what I have from what I've experienced, you know. Mm-hmm. And you may be looking to the future, but some of that is young people's job. You know, it's like looking to the future. But I am here to maintain, to keep steady the things that we have accomplished. while you right. go ahead and work on that future. You know yeah. what I'm saying? I mean, the same thing is happening in hip hop, man. Dude, can we talk a little bit about hip hop?
Of course, yeah.
I mean, same thing is happening in hip hop, right? You got this so-called mumble rap, but I don't think that's the majority. It's a lot, you know, I talked to my nephew about it, and he was like, there's a lot of great rappers out there that are doing quality work. Mm-hmm. It's just they have different venues now, and the radio ain't just it. You know, SoundCloud rappers that are doing really well, that mm-hmm. are touring, that are making money. They don't have to go through the mainstream route. And you say there's yeah. a lot of that going on, but they're not mainstream like we had to be in the 90s. You know, in the yeah. 90s, there was only, you know, it was eclectic. You had a lot, but it was contained.
Yeah.
You know what right. I mean? But you can't just throw away all the past and say, oh, it's Drake and Rakim doesn't matter.
Oh, no, like, you can't do that.
Yeah, it's like, no, there is no Drake without Rakim.
And some of these guys are aging really well. Like one of my favorite MCs of all time, Fonte from, you know, Little Brother and everything. He's been on the yeah. show a few times.
Oh, yeah.
And you get to this level. They get
He's
to this
doing the podcast thing now with Quest.
Yeah, Questlove Supreme yeah, and yeah, everything yeah, like yeah, that. Yeah. Like, I listen to him. I think he's great. Like, Pharrell Monch just put out that project. And I was just like, oh, my God. Like, are you?
Yeah.
Like, who's better than that guy? When you think about, yeah. like, Black Thought and, you know, I my thing is, like, I just don't. I don't think I'm really struggling against it. But I just don't want to be the old guy that's not opening up to the new stuff. And I don't think I'm doing
right.
that. But it's
right,
just like,
right, right. Music yeah. is music. I mean, you know, I appreciate some stuff I don't like. But it's yeah. like, you know, the older guys, I'd be like, y'all don't remember that we had a bunch of whack rappers back in the day, too.
yeah. Yeah, we don't talk about that. yeah.
Rapping Duke, you remember that? Da-ha, da-ha.
yeah.
Da-ha-ha-ha-ha. It's like, yeah. y'all remember that?
Right.
It was like, it was a lot of garbage out there. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Yeah.
And I wouldn't even call that garbage because I remember it. You know yeah. what I mean?
Right, right, right.
But, you know, I mean, the young people got to do their thing, but we ain't got to throw it away. We got to find a balance. And I think it's up to the artist to also, there are people who must maintain the bar.
Yeah.
You know, and not throw away culture.
Right.
You know, because that's what kind of happens in jazz. And then we just go, okay. And guess mm-hmm. what? White now it's more white jazz musicians than there are black.
And they're good. It's like that with kind of like soul music, too. Like I noticed like within the last like 10 years, some of these soulful artists, like they're from the UK and some of them are black. And it's just mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. like, why are these guys, what's happening to this adult contemporary where it's like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. it's been imported and they kind
yeah.
of, it seems like they give a shit more than we do. I mean, they appreciate
yeah, it. Yeah. I mean, it's something about our creativity is a blessing
mm-hmm.
and a curse sometimes. You know, and what I mean by that is because the things are changed so much that black people go, we'll have something in the next 5 to 10 years that's different and yeah. we can let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, white people will have one hot artist for one hot playwright 400 years ago and be like, no, there is no other one than this. Mm-hmm. He is still the one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they will hold on to it forever where black people. We tend to go, okay, what's next now?
Yeah.
And we can, and we do.
Yeah. It's so,
you know,
because I felt like my early 19 or 20, I discovered August Wilson. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, it was just like, you're playing roles that you really, it's like colorblind casting. And then yeah. when I get to Chicago, it's like, oh yeah. Okay. Well, you're probably going to play a black guy. The character you're going to play is just black. You're not
going yeah. to.
There's no more Stanley Kowalski for you, Chris, unless you're with a black theater company that wants to do Streetcar Named Desire for some reason. Unless you do like that stuff like they did Proof at the Goodman years ago
yep,
with a
yep.
black cast.
Yep.
So it's just kind of yeah. like, so it's like, okay, well, this is who I am. So why don't I investigate that more? And
because you want to compete.
Yeah, like I didn't care about like, okay, if I'm going to be the black guy, I'll be a black.
It's like the Negro Leagues. You know the history of the Negro Leagues, right?
Yeah.
It was like Negro Leagues was the more entertaining, the more the height of baseball. They were more talented people in the Negro Leagues, right? But when they allowed us to play on a big stage and they can make a full-time wage where they can live off of it, you know, and they start to integrate, then the Negro Leagues was no longer necessary. So it's a question of now they're starting to do these colorblind casting, right? More. But I'm still with August on this. You know, it's like what we need more theaters and opportunities of color so we can have choices, options.
Yeah. The last I did see before the shutdown, I saw Radio Golf down at the Two River Theater. Durden directed with, is it Brian?
Jason Durden,
directed it. And it was great because I'd never seen the show and I really enjoyed it. And it was just like, okay, I can play the older guy when I'm in my 60s or 70s.
Yeah, you can keep on playing. Yeah. I think there's balance between all that stuff, man. You know, there's balance between all of it. I think historians matter. You know, I think people who had a bar and you got the opportunity to continue to play August, you know, at this state, you know, they're doing films every other year, you know, so you got 16 more years of August Wilson films coming up, you know, that's if they do it, keep on doing it every other year. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of opportunity still to happen there. You know, people still need to be exposed. August Wilson, the reason I started the August Wilson monologue competition was because when August passed, he offered me something that that I thought was really special. And that was access. He allowed me to sit in the room, to watch him process, to sit underneath a black director, take a show all the way to Broadway. All the way to Broadway. I did it twice, right?
What shows? Which shows?
I did Jim and the Ocean.
Okay.
From Goodman. It started at Goodman.
I went all the way
to Broadway. I went all the way to Broadway with that. And then I did Radio Golf on Broadway. And then right after I did Radio Golf, I did King Haley. With Russell Hornsby at Signature Theater.
I love Russell Hornsby, man. He's one of the dudes that made me want to go to grad school. Like, cause he was when he was in Gideon's Crossing, I was like, that dude's fucking cool. Like, I was like,
he's a hard worker too. Right.
Yeah.
But you know, what I was thinking about was when he passed it, I was thinking about, you know, how do I create opportunity for other people and kind of give back a little bit of what August gave me? And Kenny and Kenny Leon and Todd Kreigler were starting this August Wilson monologue competition at the time in Atlanta. And they were telling me about how dope it was and I should start one in Chicago. And I had just started at the University of Illinois, Chicago, and I had just directed something. But to be honest, they had about 12 black people in their department of 100 and something, you know? And now, you know, I started the August Wilson and I was just trying to get kids in college.
Yeah.
Get them into, to expose them to, you know, if they got a little talent, maybe I can get them into college. You know, right now we are at almost down the middle. It's like 37% white, 33% Latino, and like 28% black right now.
In the theater program?
Yeah, UIC. So the majority of our department is either black or brown now. And that is because of exposure of the August Wilson monologue competition. And they felt like they had a home, you know?
Yeah.
And I was about giving out scholarships, man.
Yeah.
I was about how can we get them access? You know, if we get them, you know, in a lot of ways, acting is a gateway drug. It is the thing that is visceral, that makes you feel, and it makes you, so that leads you into other things that you can do with your life. And all the skills you learn from acting, you know, you can apply no matter what you're doing. You know, you can apply it to sales, you can apply it to leadership, you can apply it to whatever, you know, what do I want? How do I get what I want? You know what I'm saying? What are the things that I'm going to do to get what I want? You know what I mean? Those things you could practice every day, right? So I started it because of that. And then I also wanted to give back a little bit of what I had been given. And that is, I want to show them that they can be themselves. They can, it's like, oh, I know this. This is like my uncle. This is like my aunt. I know what this feels like. And they can go up there like a Shakespeare competition that they do every year. And I can get a shot.
Yeah.
You know, because the truth is, with a monologue, man, is that everybody can give you all the help in the world. But when you got to spit and deliver, it's only you.
Yeah.
It's you by yourself.
Yeah.
Right.
It made me think, because you used to say this, and I used to say this when we were in rehearsal. You used to say, like, I'm gonna butcher it, but you used to talk about the Oscars, and like when they show like Best Supporting Actor, and they show scenes from the movie, and you say like all it takes is one moment.
Yeah, I got that from August.
Okay, yeah. So I want to talk about that. And I just want to, I want you to go back and talk about like when you met him for the first time, and then maybe, you know, we'll bring it back to where we are. But like, you used to say that like all it takes is one moment to get that trophy. You're not that you're going for the awards, but like really being in the moment and
yeah, August said that to me, right? Okay. And then I'll go back to how I met him.
Yeah, you know? Sure.
So August, we were outside Jim in the Ocean one day, and he was on a smoke break or whatever, and you know, I had my Black and Mild or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was like, he was like, yeah, man, I just gotta, you know, we gotta find that moment. And I was like, what do you mean that moment? He was like, you know, technically, you know, if you want to win a Tony, all you need is one moment. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, I kind of was like, one moment, really? You know?
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, man. He was like, all you need is one moment for them to remember when they go for the next day, for the next, you know, when they vote. They'd be like, when I think of Jim in the Ocean, I think of this.
Yeah.
You know? And it immediately comes in my mind. And I was like, oh, that is true. Because when you think about performances, you typically think about a moment of how it made you feel.
Yeah.
Right. You think about the production totality, but it's that one moment that is so true that it resonates in your soul.
Yeah.
And, you know, in some ways, I'm not searching for awards. I'm searching to touch people's souls. Right. Yeah. So it's like in the search of that one moment, you know, actors are the vessels in which all those ideas leak out of, you know, and, you know, so I would always be activated by kind of, we're looking for that one moment. I don't know where it's going to show up. I don't know when it's going to show up, but I know we can continue invest into that process and then it'll show up.
Yeah.
You know, it'll show up.
Yeah.
Now for your other question, I guess, how I met August. When I was in grad school at University of Pittsburgh, right? They offered a scholarship, right? That was a research scholarship. And it was mostly given to scientists and, you know, people who are writing books or whatever, you know. And I said, you know, I'm going to do some more acting, you know what I'm saying? And I'm going to see if I can get this money, you know, because that's what grad school does give you. It gives you a lot of, it opens up a lot of opportunities that you can see pathways and you go. So I was like, let me see if I can get some of this money. You know what I'm saying? I want to write this grant and I want to get it. You know what I mean? And I was the first theater artist that had ever gotten it. They gave me and that money was to go to Grahamstown Theater Festival in South Africa, which is the second largest theater festival, and bring a play that Javon Johnson wrote, you know?
Okay.
And he's, you know, Javon's on, what's that show right now? Tyler Perry show with the White House. Oval, the Oval.
Okay.
He's on the Oval right now. Right. And he's also a playwright, a writer. And I said, we're going to take two of his plays. I'm going to take them to South Africa. And I was an actor then, you know, and they gave me money to go. So I took him to South Africa, got to South Africa, looked at the program. August was there.
Wow.
And I was like, I'm definitely going to this thing. You know, we went there, right? And it was like a, you know, a conference room space and maybe 200 seats. And I guess it was like about 50 people there. And I was like, why isn't this place packed? So I went and me and my partners went and sat in front and was like this in his face the whole time. The whole time I was like, what you saying? Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. We were right in his face. And then afterwards, because there weren't so many people around, he did a meet and greet, basically. Mm. And basically, I took the time and I was like, hey, look, listen, my name is Derek Sanders. We all came from Pittsburgh. He was like, oh, yeah, Pittsburgh. And I said, we know Rob Penny. He was like, oh, Rob's my boy, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, you know, if you ever get some time, August, I would love to sit down with you and just talk to you about some of the ideas I have. And he said, let's do it now. Wow. And I was like, oh, what? Right now? And he was like, yeah, yeah, let's go grab some coffee. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. So I had the idea for Congo Square already. So I went, you know, just verbal diarrhea on him for about an hour. You know what I mean? And just explaining to him how ground in which I stand touched me, you know what I mean? And kind of changed my perspective of where I was going. And I think I'm going to heed his call into like, we don't need colorblind casting. We need more black theaters. We need you to support black theaters. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's what I'm going to do. And I want to start this company. And he said, well, let me know what I can do. Mm-hmm. As far as I'm concerned, man, the premier playwright just co-signed me, dog.
Yeah, of course.
And I'm the wrong person to tell if you're going to do something. I'm just wrong person. Don't say you're going to do it. Yeah. Because if you're going to do it, then I'm going to be like, hey, remember that you said you're going to do? Hey, you remember when you said you're going to do? Hey, you remember we said, oh, we going to do that thing? Oh, blah, blah. You're going to have to be like, don't call me no more, ever.
Yeah, right, right.
Like, oh, well, I thought you said you were going to click, you know.
Yeah.
You know, that you would have to do that to me, right? So I went and started Congo Square with my boy, Reggie Nelson.
Right? Is it like what year? 99, 2000?
99.
Okay.
We started in 99.
Yeah.
And we started Congo Square. We already had the idea. We created a mission. We got a board, you know what I'm saying, and did all that stuff. As we were building our stuff together, logos and all that stuff, and that's not the traditional Chicago way. Chicago, you do a show, the show is hot, and then you build a company. But we already knew we were trying to build a company, so we came out with logo and T-shirts and all this stuff before we even did a show, you know? Because we were trying to build a company. And when I was in grad school, I had read a book where somebody had done a thesis, and it was in the library, about what had went wrong with black theater companies, you know, and how they succeeded or didn't succeed. So I was like, you know, infrastructure, you know what I'm saying? We got to make sure we establish the infrastructure or whatever, blah, 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 blah. So we get started and we realized that, I think they were doing King Headley. I think they were doing King Headley. That August was going to go and do King Headley at the Goodman. And they were bringing him in. And, you know, of course I asked August, and August was, you know, was like, yeah, I'll be in your advisory board and not, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I think it might have been Reggie who was like, if August is coming, D, you know what I'm saying? Why don't we do an August Wilson? And I was like, you think so? And he was like, yeah. And then we get him to come. I was like, you can get him to come. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it, right? I said, we're going to do an August Wilson piano lesson for our first one. Got August to come. He loved the show. Matter of fact, at the end of it, he said something that, I'll never forget. He was like, hey, man, you also keep on supporting these guys as long as they keep on doing work like this. So he was like, if they do some half-baked stuff, don't support them no more, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he was like, as long as they keep on doing this. And then afterwards, August was like, he was like, Derek, you know how many people tell me they're going to start theater companies? And I was like, oh, no, I don't know. And then he was like, you were the only one that told me you were going to start a theater company and did it.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, wow. And after that, he became a generous supporter. Every year, he gave us money. Every year, he gave us significant money. And was our support and always shouted us out when he talked about it, you know? So that's the short version of it, sure, about how I made August. But later on, you know, I went to go see Jitney and Marion McClinton. I walked in and her and his assistant was white. And I was like, why is the assistant white? You know what I mean? And I found out that it was somebody from Yale or whatever. So I said, I wrote a letter to August and said, hey, I would love to be an assistant. You know what I'm saying? Who better to get that knowledge from you and Marion other than a black person? You know what I'm saying? Let me sit beside you and watch. And that's what they allowed me to do. And I learned a lot, you know, from that. And from watching him, from being in the room, to knowing that he's getting some of the same frustrations, to seeing a Broadway show about to go up, stall, come back. You know, I learned about casting. I learned about different actors and allowing different actors to do certain things. You know, I learned about his writing process. I learned a lot.
Yeah.
So after he passed, that's when I started the August Wilson monologue competition, because I wanted to give back some of that.
It's a beautiful thing that you guys did, because I don't want to make you laugh I don't want this to sound wrong, but I see the same like resurgence and zeal for young people to like be in this in the theatrical space as I did in 2003, when High School Musical came out. You know what I mean? Because it made, because I would just say that you and me, theater nerds, we came to it how we came to it, and it's a big deal for us. But for mainstream America to really be like, okay, it's almost like how sports is now, where it's like, if I want my kid to be a quarterback, he's going to be working at being a quarterback at 8 years old. And if I come from means, I'm going to put my money into making this kid a pro. So I saw that same, and it was just like, it was a beautiful thing to me. Like, I think I probably maybe 20 minutes into giving voice, I teared up a little bit, where I was like, yeah, these kids are finding out about theater. Like you said, whether they end up doing it or not, it was just like, yeah, this is what kids need. This is what black kids need. This is everybody needs this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's an amazing thing.
Thank you, man. Thank you. And we're really proud of the work that we do. And a lot of the alums that stay in they come back and they work with us. You know what I mean? Or there's some alums that are working actors now,
man.
And I find myself really proud of that. I look at them and I go, yeah, there they go. You know, and not that I got anything to do with it, man. They did it themselves. But I like to think that, you know, maybe I helped inspire them a little bit, and I'm being a vehicle, you know. And it was like, what did Tupac say? It's like, I'm not the person that's going to change the world, but I say I will spark the mind that would change the world.
Yeah.
And that's good for me too. You know, I still got more to do. Believe you me, it ain't done. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, sparking a mind that changes the world is an important role.
Can you talk about this, like starting a theater company? I want you to talk about starting a theater company, and then maybe close on your relationship with Chad, because one thing is, like, when I was there, when I was in Chicago, taking Congo Square, Impact, ETA out of the equation, it seemed like mainstream theater in Chicago was just like, you do these plays, and then in February is where you would do August Wilson, and then white people would be like, oh my God, this is a beautiful. But then these other three companies were doing new black works and doing cool and interesting things. Not that August Wilson, to me, August Wilson is
is the American Shakespeare. If whatever is as good as that or better than that, that's who he was to me. But just for this, it was just like, okay, we can look back at the Black experience, feel some kind of way about it on at the Court Theater. And then when you see Black people going to school, you clutch your white people will clutch their purses as they're leaving the theater. I don't know. That was my perception. What did you see? Did you see like a void in the theater scene in Chicago? Is that one of the things, reasons that make you want to start it? Because that's what I saw. That's what I saw. Like, it's like, it just seems like it's not nothing really Black. And then August Wilson in February.
I suspect, Chris, you've done your research on this.
I was question. There. I was just there for 5 years. I was just there for, I was just, you know.
No, I say the reason that we started, that we came to Chicago, we were looking at Atlanta, New York, D.C.
Okay.
To start a theater company, right? And at the time, there were 5 theater companies, Black theater companies in Chicago that did year-round seasons. Okay. And there was no other place in America like that. Mm-hmm. There was no other place that had 5 Black theater companies doing year-round seasons, right? So at the time, that was Onyx, Jackie mm-hmm. Taylor, ETA, Impact, and I think Fleetwood Jordan or something like that. Okay. It was someone like that, right? So it was 5. And what I realized and what me and my partner realized, Reggie, is that it was like, well, if it's 5, he was like, if they're 5, they can take 6. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if,
yeah.
But it was like, but for us, all we felt like is that all we got to do is come in and be the best. Mm-hmm. And I said, some people are on the South Side, some people are on the West. It was Chicago Theater Company. Sorry. Chicago Theater Company at the time. And, at the time, you know, there was some on the South Side, some on the North Side, you know, saying, you know, saying a couple on the North Side, you know, saying, but nobody was really, I was like, well, we don't have to worry about serving the Black audience just to serve Black, because some places you're the only Black offering. So you got to stay in business. So mm-hmm. our thing was, is that we got Black theater, so we don't have to worry about that. We can concentrate on something else.
Yeah.
We want a house. We want a home. We want to compete with Steppenwolf. Also, Chicago had the rare opportunity that if you had a hot show, they're the only place that would put you on the same page front of the art section with the bigger theaters.
Mm-hmm.
No other place did that, right? So if you had a show and it was good, it'd be Goodman and then it'd be your thing right
yeah.
underneath.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's equity right there. That's mm-hmm. an opportunity for us. Because if you got a hot show in Chicago, it doesn't matter how much money you got.
It's right.
hot. And they're going to put it on the front page. We going to go for that, you know. And so that's what we did. You know, I wanted an ensemble because I was always inspired by the Negro ensemble. And if there was still a Negro ensemble when I was coming up, then I probably would have went there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was inspired by artists who were giving to each other and worked together on their craft as they were building their careers. And some of them are the greatest artists, Denzel, you know, Sam Jackson, all those guys, Ruben, Santiago Hudson, you know, saying all those guys came from out of Ruby D, Ozzie Davis, all these guys came from did stuff in Negro Ensemble, right? And I was kind of like, we gonna be that of Midwest. Mm-hmm. What we gonna do is that we gonna be the new Negro Ensemble. And Chicago had an ensemble tradition like Steppenwolf. And I was like, all we gotta do is come in and be the best, you know, at that, you know? So our ambition, our hubris was high, you know? Knowing what our specific goal was is not necessarily, and we also wanted to, because we had Black, Brown, Asian friends, to be honest, when you went to other theater company, when you went to ETA, right, you had to explain to them before they come, okay, now, listen, when you come in here, this is a Black community theater. built by blah, 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 blah. So don't be coming out here with your expectations. You know what I'm saying? We wanted to eliminate that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. As David Barr used to tell him, he's like, y'all are a thinking man's theater. Right. So we wanted to bring people who is like, you ain't have to explain anything. The quality here is going to be the quality of anything else you see in the world, you know. And ETA had its, you know, we used to work at ETA.
Yeah.
Not knocking it. I think that was extremely important. A lot of artists come out there. I started my career, you know, partly there, too. You know what I'm saying? So I know what it is.
My only thing with ETA is that you on two show days, they would feed you and they would feed you well in between shows. And
that
and they give you the itis and then you have to go back and do another show. That's the only.
You know why they did that? You know why they did that, right?
Why?
Because they had two show days and they wouldn't feed their cast. And then a long time ago, somebody got into a car accident and died.
Oh.
So it was their way of keeping the actors there with them.
Okay.
During that time.
All right. You know,
it was always a nice perk, though. And the food was always good.
The food was always great. No, it was great. Yeah, but it was just like.
And especially being like young artists, we're like.
Yeah.
Two show day Sunday, right? but yeah, man, I mean, I know we're running low on time, so I'm going to jump.
I got all the time. I'm good.
Okay. Okay. Cool. But yeah, man, I mean, I think a lot of our work. A lot of our work was about, providing a space that wasn't there,
you know,
and that we felt like we could because we had the pedigree to do. I mean, so, yeah, we could do August Wilson and we could do Chekhov if you want to. We trained in that.
Right.
That's the reason I went to grad school is because I went to Howard and most people didn't go to grad school after they went to Howard, you know, but I was like, you know what? I want to know what the white people know.
Yeah.
You know, I want to know how they talk about the work, you know? And so I went to grad school so I can know what they know. I can see what they're doing and I can understand. So I study classics and, you know, so it's not that I'm not classically trained. Absolutely. I am, you know, and I understand and respect, you know, American classics, world classics, but I understand also we can apply that to our work.
Yeah.
And I'm not ashamed.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not ashamed of it. It's not lesser. You know, I don't feel like it's lesser.
You know, and you're absolutely right. I mean, I felt like as an actor in Chicago, I was just spoiled by all this talent, and I was spoiled because I got to go see all of it and didn't have to pay. New York is a little harder, so I would go see Broadway stuff every now and then. And then I would go to the past couple of years before everything shut down. I would go to the Williamstown Theater Festival in the Berkshires, but I would only go if it was a black show. I got to see something black if I'm going all the way up there. And they got some good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. They start doing more and more now. So, I mean, the field is changing, you know what I'm saying? Slowly but surely, you know, it's changing. It's going to take a lot, but I mean, it is changing.
Yeah. I think it's changing for the better. Like, I saw a skeleton crew in Westport, Connecticut. And it was just like, it was great. You know, like I haven't read the show before I saw it, but I just heard really good things about it. And it was just like a really good contemporary play. And it's like, I love doing stuff from the past, but it's like, we exist here too. You know, like we exist in the now. So it's good to see that. And it's good to see that these companies are doing it, you know?
Yeah.
Can you speak on your relationship with Chadwick Boseman? Because I always tell people that I was like, well, you know, his play premiered at Congo Square. Like I would tell people that, you know, that's how I knew of him before he came to prominence. That's how I heard of him. I auditioned for that show, too. Fresh out of grad school. But it was a great show. Was it was that based on his friend getting murdered by the cops? Is it that the prince?
The same thing
Ta-Nehisi Coates writes about.
Yeah, Ta-Nehisi Coates writes about. It's the same person.
Okay. Is it Prince same Nelson? Person. Prince Nelson? No, that's so. Actual Prince. Prince. We won't mess it up. I know his name was Prince.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, something Prince.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm skipping on his first name. It's just eluding me.
That's all right.
So look, I knew Chad at Howard,
mm-hmm.
and I met him, you know, when he came in to Howard, you know, and I was an upperclassman, and he was like, and we just clicked early on. I was like, this is a cool cat, right?
Yeah.
And we would sit around and talk about art and talk about his expectation. We hang out, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, at the time, he was a directing major. A directing major. Right. But I mean, we maintained our friendship through the years and, you know, and at some point, you know, I was a mentor and a friend, you know, to him. And like, I remember the conversation when, Michael B. Jordan replaced him on that soap opera. I remember when he got replaced on the soap opera, and we talked about what happened there. You know what I mean? And you know how he was playing the stereotype of this black thug, and you know, and he had some notes for the producers because he felt like, you know, it wasn't true, and you know, and things weren't honest. You know what I mean? And he wasn't asking to change the character from not a thug. He's saying, I just wanted to be honest and explain why he's like that, not just saying, oh, he's just a bad black kid.
Mm-hmm.
So he just want more depth.
Yeah.
The soap opera, you know. And he went and talked to the producer, and then the producer was like, okay, we'll take your notes, Chad. Thank you. I'll talk to the writer. And then they replaced him the next day. Ew. And then the following season or whatever, they replaced him with Michael B. Jordan.
Mm.
And I remember the hard time he had about that. And he was going into film directing then. And he was a part of the Hip Hop Theater Festival, you know, and he was doing, he had a play called Rhyme Deferred that they built with Camilla Forbes, who's now the head of the Apollo Theater, and Hieroglyphic Graffiti was another hip hop play that he did. And when we were thinking about doing our first commission of Congo Square, I was like, what new can Congo do at the table? I want to bring something to the table that technically only we could do. Mm-hmm. So that ETA couldn't do it. And you know what I'm saying? And no other theater company could do this like we could do it, right? So I talked to Chad because I know he was classically trained, and I know he got that scholarship from Denzel, and he mm-hmm. went out to like London and trained. Yeah. Bada, it might have been Bada. I don't mm-hmm. I forget where it was, but I know he went out there and trained at Shakespeare or whatever. So I was explaining to him that I got these actors who are classically trained, and I'm looking for something that is a bridge. And I said, I want something that is elevated like Shakespeare, but uses the ideas of urban prose. And at the time, it was Deaf Poetry Jam was really hot.
Yeah,
and I was like, uses the Deaf Poetry Jam kind of thing, but uses it like Shakespeare. So what that means is that the emotional and mental arc of the character is also tied to their language, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's in prose, and sometimes it's in poetry, sometimes it's rhyme couplets and stuff like that. And I knew Chad would understand what I'm saying. You know what I mean? And he was like, oh, actually, I'm thinking about something already. And I was like, well, great. Why don't we develop that? I'll produce it at Congo Square, right? And he was like, great. So we commissioned Chad to write Deep Azure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the people who were in Congo Square were already new, like the lead of it was Bakista King, and she went to Howard with Chad. So she knew Chad. Yeah. And we just developed this piece, and we knew it was special, but I didn't know if people would get it. You know what I mean?
Okay.
One of these things where I was like, I didn't, you know, we were hitting on something, but was it far ahead of its time that people have access to it? And man, I can't tell you. I mean, it's one of those legendary productions where as many people tell me they saw it, couldn't have possibly saw that show. You know what I mean?
Really?
We didn't have that many seats that all these people saw this show. You know what I mean? But it was one of those things that we did a workshop at the Apollo Theater in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And we did like a bare bones production of the thing. So I blocked it and everybody and all the cast, you know, in Congo Square, first thing we did in New York. And man, that audience in New York went crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, we got something here. There's something here, you know? And we came and do it in Chicago. We did the full production in Chicago and really well received, really positive experience. And then Chad was working on a film version. Mm. You know, he was going to do a film of it. And what ended up happening was, is that he started getting all these acting gigs now. Now, mind you, this is during the time where he was kind of blackballed, or at least his agents told him blackballed. And he wasn't getting much acting gigs. He was like, okay, well, I'm going to pivot. I'm going to write and direct my own stuff, right? I'm not going to wait on them, you know? I did what was right. I did what, you know, I got to pivot. And then all of a sudden, the roles start coming back. And then next thing you know, the opportunity for 42 came in, and then James Brown, and then Black Panther, and then boom, you know. And I gotta say, I was really fortunate in that his relationship with me never changed. Mm-hmm. It was always the same. I went to go visit him when he did Ma Rainey. I was out in Pittsburgh, came to visit him. Mm-hmm. And he gave to the August Wilson monologue competition that year. And gave us a hefty check. And I remember our relationship, you know, even though he was a big star or whatever, it never, ever changed, man. And I was always fortunate for the time I got to spend with him, and how our conversations about art, an opportunity. I did a film, my first film, Perfect Day, the short film.
Okay.
He produced that.
Oh, wow.
He helped me. Okay. Yeah, he produced that for me and was always an advocate for me taking the next step into film. So a lot of my focus on this past 6 months of quarantine have been like, you know what? I got to really press it forward because my brother believed in me.
Yeah.
And he wanted me to take this next step. And now I got to show and prove. I got to definitely show and prove. And he was always helping me too. He was always helping me do that, you know? Yeah. I mean, he was a really close friend and just a good man, you know? Mm-hmm.
He seemed like it. Yeah. Did you direct Deep Azure?
Yeah, I directed
Deep Azure. I remember really enjoying that.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. Like,
No, I didn't.
I'm like,
opposed to the other stuff you did. I remember.
No, because I remember that I auditioned for it, and I was like, I could have been an asshole and been like, I'm not going to see that play, but I saw it, and I was like, God, it was really robust. Like I remember like the staging of like the oh my God, was it like. Either like so a step show type thing or a band. It was something you guys did.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. To the audience. A marching band.
That shit was great. And not that many, and you're saying like a lot of people didn't come to see it as much as people were lying to you.
No, not so much people lying to me. It just becomes one of those productions where it's kind of like, well, it's so good near the end when people got to see it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, everybody tells me that they saw it. And I was like, it's no way you saw it. You know?
the legend
of the production grows. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think I remember you coming. So I know you.
I was there early. I was there early on. I came to see pretty much everything before I left as much as I could.
So I know people seen it. I was just being facetious that it has become legendary. You know what I mean? I don't think anybody's a liar, but
I always like say that like that's my own. That's the only thing I know about Chad early on before he blew up. And then one time I was at an audition a couple years ago in the city, and I'm not gonna say the casting director's name. I'll tell you off mic, but I was in for an audition, and then Chad had sent them like a a plant, like just to thank them for something. And they're like, that's from Chadwick Boseman. I was like, oh, nice, nice plant. And and then I went and did an audition that I didn't book. So that was, you know, that was that show. That's my connection to Chad.
Yeah, so, man. I mean, yeah. You know, Chris, I got to say, man, is that, you know, you've kept your hustle going, though, bro.
Yeah.
Where a lot of people stop. And right. I remember Felicia Rashad told me this. I was sitting down with Felicia during a break or something during Gem in the Ocean. And, you know, I knew her from my Howard days. She's also a Howard grad.
Right.
And then she was like, you're still at it, huh? And I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know? She was like.
Why'd she say it to you like that, though? You're still at it, huh?
She was leading somewhere.
Yeah.
She was like, you know, often success is determined about who sticks around in this business.
That's true.
Yeah. And I said, what do you mean? And she was like, for a long time, I was the understudy and like shadow in musical theater in New York. And then one day, you know, I'm almost 40 and the Cosby Show pops up and I book it.
Yeah.
And she's like, and a lot of my classmates just didn't stick around. You know, they got families and they got, you know, saying, and they went off and did something else. So, you know, I know a lot of it was about, you know, some things just don't change. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, I even remember, you know, some of the conversations me and Chad had, you know, he would be complaining, you know what I'm saying? We would be, you know, going back and forth about stuff in the city. And the only thing that's changed is that instead of talking about Abana or who's that artist director of sound, or Martha Levy, like we would do.
Yeah.
He's talking about Eisner.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about Michael Eisner at the head of Disney. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
It's the same conversation. It's just the stakes are different. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. More money. You know what I'm saying? So what I started to realize is that you have to find your path.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and your path about sticking with it and being dedicated to it. And, you know, you didn't have no entree. It's not like what part of Virginia you say you from? You're from Maryland.
I'm from PG. But yeah, my parents, I got roots. I got roots.
From PG. Yeah, I think you're from Maryland. Right.
Yeah.
And I was like, you don't know nobody famous.
No,
you didn't have a famous uncle or cousin or something that could just get you into a movie. You know what I mean? So you're doing it all by the sweat of your own brow.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of these people, you know, in Hollywood, specifically white, you know, and sometimes black now, you know, got entree because they're legacies.
Yeah.
You know, and I tell my students all the time, it's like, look, man, you're going to have to, you know, when you double down on yourself, you're going to have to stick with that. And believe in yourself. Like Jay-Z said, you know, he was like, everybody was saying no to me. So I went out and did it for myself. And I got to say, you know, with this podcast and you deciding to be a comedian and just diversifying the talents that you have, man, it was like, it's only a matter of time. Just don't, you can't give up on yourself. You got to be like dedicated to it. And I know it's rough. You can't tell me that it ain't rough. You know what I'm saying? You go in there and you change it up. You go in there, but you stay dedicated to the craft. You stay committed, you know, and your time will come. Well,
I appreciate that, man, coming from you because, I mean, it's the same thing that, like, Todd said to me when he was on 3 years ago. He's like, man, that's pretty cool that you left and then you did your own thing. He's like, you left Chicago and stuff. But it was kind of like I the stand-up thing was just fear of not, like, I should have been doing it earlier. Like I mentioned to him, like the Sati Word RIP, he and I were fooling around before a show, getting ready to, you know, warming up and stuff. And we were doing a show together. This was like, maybe 07, 06 or 07, right before I left. And we were doing a show and he said, you should do stand-up. And I said, no, cause I was afraid. You know, like acting, if they don't like you, they just don't like your character. But stand up, if they just don't,
they don't like you.
Yeah, they don't like you, period. Exactly. And so I was like, no. He's like, let me take you down to jokes and I'm like, nah, man. And then moving here and just saying like, well, I need to do something. Like, I'm not going to take improv classes because I'm in debt for having a theater degree. And I'll just try stand up. And it led me back to acting and eventually got me on Broadway before the shutdown. We were in previews directed in a show by Sam Mendes. It's just like insane.
Oh yeah. That's top of this. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, and it was just like a little small ensemble role. But I was like, I can't believe I'm here. He's like,
but that in New York is specifically that Broadway is a circular club.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like once you bring entree into it, then they start to open doors for you. You know what I mean? It's like, if you haven't been, you can't get in, but how can you get in if you've never been?
I got to tell you about the audition after we cut this off, but like,
okay,
it's just one of those things where it's like you have to keep going. Like I got another buddy, Scott Stanglin, who's a talented dude, Chicago guy. We trained together, and he did the same thing. Like he just kept going. Like you kind of just gotta, you know.
What is the transfer from actor to comedian? Like, I think I'm funny. You know, I try to be funny in class all the time, but I was like, I'm not a comedian funny. And I was like, I can't get up there and be doing that.
it's another tool in the utility belt, but it's like a more, what do I always say? It's like how do I want to say it? I've been saying it all the time. It's a more showy version of yourself when you're on stage. Like I try to not have any artifice when I'm doing stand up. It's just like I'm talking to you now, but there's more of an elevated sense of who I am, where it's just I'm talking about my life or I'm making an observation. But it's almost like with regards to theater, I always say this on the show, and it could be a drinking game. It's never done. Like the role is never done. It's just like the show closes, but you and I could be, like I always say, we can be doing waiting for Godot, you and I, for 2 months. You say a line differently, and I'm just like, oh shit, I wish we could explore that for another week, but it's closing night. So it's still pulling out truth. I mean, the way, not to sound like a douche, but the way that I do it, it is. Like my favorite, you know, like a Patrice O'Neal, a Bill Burr, you know, Chappelle in a lot of ways.
Chappelle, is the master of it. He kind of evolved into this thing where it's no artifice at all in that shit.
I would say I've been saying on the show, he's a griot now. And to a certain degree, he is. And it's just like, you know, people say it's not funny. It's like, but the dude's put in 30 years of sweat equity to make us laugh. If he decides that he wants to put a little thing out, because that show came out, that show premiered when we were doing that show at ETA in like 2000.
Dave Chappelle?
Yeah, his show was out in like 02, 03 or 04 or something, like whenever it was.
Yeah, it's no doubt that Dave can be funny now.
Yeah.
It's like at what point does Mike Tyson have to prove that he can knock you out?
Right. Right. Yeah.
It's like, I don't have to prove that anymore. I can, you know? So I think what he's doing now is just, he's elevated to the form that I can educate. I can use my platform, not just for comedy, but I can teach people something about themselves, about the world. And maybe that's what, cause he's just really smart, because he just talking a thing and he'll talk about a thing and he was like, oh, was that funny? But was it funny? You know, but he still landed the story. The level of storytelling that he's at is beyond, you know, who's your top three of all time comedians?
That's kind of hard, because like
black comedians. Let's black comedians.
Okay.
Black comedians.
Well, I got to go with Martin Lawrence, because he was from PG County and he's from Maryland. So it's like, he to me.
Are you doing them in any order? Are you going to do 1, 2, 3, or are you going to do it no order?
I'm going to say no order.
Okay.
I think. Martin made me just kind of inspired me to even be where I am right now at this low level of showbiz, because he was from the hood, you know. Yeah. And he was just like, he kind of had that rock star swagger, but also the vulnerability where he was not afraid to be low status. And that's like a fearlessness that he had that I don't think people appreciated about him when he was at his height. And then, you know, Pryor, mm-hmm. obviously, because like, I think there was this quote in his biography where one of them, somebody said, like, he could just kind of unzip his brain and put everything out in the open. And there's a lot of heart to it also. But he's one of the best to ever do it. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of got to go with like almost have to go with Rock because of Bring the Pain in a way, because Bring the Pain is arguably
interesting.
One of the best.
Chris Rock.
Yeah. One of the best specials ever.
That was in DC, wasn't it? One Bring the Pain in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What was that Killing Me Softly?
Killing Me Softly was in DC. Bring the Pain was DC also, because he opens up talking about Marion Barry, Chocolate City.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And the way he got the audience back after that. But I think Chris kind of, he would probably tell you, but like it was more work for him. But like structurally, it's one of the best specials. You talk about like politics, race relations, relationships, and then like dirty stuff at the end. And then like, you know, like you got, like, I loved Eddie, but it was just kind of like Pryor and Martin, Rock. And then you kind of, Patrice has been kind of lionized after his death, but I saw that taping, that Elephant in the Room tape. I was there. And it was, he was just like, it kind of gets to a point where he's a philosopher, whether you agreed with him or not, you know? Yeah. So those are some. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I would say for me, Richard Pryor start, mm-hmm. just because Richard could do a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
He was great at storytelling. His storytelling mm-hmm. is flawless.
Yeah.
Right. He was great at characters. He mm-hmm. would do, you know, he would do these different characters when he playing these old men and these people from his past.
Yeah. Right?
And he was really great at not setups, but things that felt like it was like lessons from his life.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Really good at it. He was just like top notch. Right. I got to say Eddie, because Eddie is the first person that I felt like took it to rock star status. Like literally rock star.
Mm-hmm.
Leather suit rock star status, right? You say Chris Rock. That's interesting.
Just because of like Bring the Pain, because like he's more technically sound than a lot of people. I mean, you can almost see the like there was this I think it's called, I have to look it up, but it was like this thing called Iconoclast or some. Dave Chappelle and Maya mm-hmm. Angelou did this mm-hmm. Iconoclast thing. Yeah. But it was something that Chris Rock did, and Wanda Sykes was talking about him, and she was saying how like you could see like, because Chris really had to work, and you can see like at the end of that set he throws his mic down and he just kind of becomes like, I'm like he's Clark Kent again. And it's like, you see how hard he worked, but like, I only put Chris there cause we didn't even say Cosby yet.
Yeah. That's where I was going next, to be honest.
My next one was Cosby. Okay. Cause it's
my
like,
next one was going to be Cosby. Okay. I was going to say, it's not going to be popular, but no. My third one would probably be Cosby.
Look, man, I saw him. I live in New Jersey, and I saw him right in my backyard, right the day or two before that Hannibal Buress video came out, where everybody decided, I had my first like TV spot doing stand up on like a cable channel or whatever, And to celebrate, I took myself. I'm going to see Cosby. Paid like $75. Sat up in the bleachers or what? Sat up in the what do you call it? The top.
The balcony. What do they call
it? Yeah, we haven't been in a theater in a year. Sit in a balcony and just 2 hours and change, killing.
Yeah,
amazing.
His story tells like nobody's business, man.
Man,
the Cosby Show, and I mean, you know, Cosby's just a whole. It's really complex. You know what I mean? I think it's really complex and really simple. You know, I mean, he did what he had to. He did what he did. You know, you should pay for it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, doesn't take away from what Fat Albert did for me when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know, those things and Cosby Show, what that did for me and what that did, what Different World did for Black University.
Yes.
You
know? Yeah.
And all the things that he stood up for. You know, to get Black people where they were, you know. Now, mm-hmm. I heard stories before this came out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I've seen him be an asshole, at least. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And but you know, it's stories about people that people love.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know? But, you know, I would put Bill third for me. Mm. Bill third. If you take it joke for joke and setups and he used to tell these huge stories.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It wasn't just set up punchline. It would be these huge stories that land on a thing that is funny. You know what I mean? And that takes a certain kind of skill, you know? That takes a certain kind of, and you know, I don't know, you know, if I was to include, you know, white people, then I would have to include George Carlin.
Yeah.
I would have to include, God, what's the guy, the Jewish guy name?
Seinfeld?
Not Seinfeld. Lenny Bruce.
Okay.
Lenny Bruce, you know, you know, hardcore blue comic.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that, man. I know I'm not a comedian, but you know what I was
you
really
like what you like,
in,
man.
You know,
there's nothing wrong with that. It's
that's a way to say, hey, man, you could be wrong. You know, nothing wrong.
No,
with
no,
wrong.
it's whatever works for you. Like my favorite working comic really is Bill Burr because.
Oh,
there
I love
is like it's a this is what I was going to say.
I love
it's a,
Burr.
It's a heightened. I've opened for him a couple times. It's like,
oh, wow.
It's like a heightened version of yourself. But there's no this is what it's like. It's no artifice, but it's just a heightened version of yourself.
And the amount of bravery. I mean, he just comes at people.
Yeah.
You know, and he does it. Yeah, it's just a fine line. And, you know, I love Bill Burr.
Yeah.
You know what I was wondering about. You know, this is getting to a long conversation, I guess. But
it's all right,
but I was wondering about is that what's the difference between because it could be a drain, it could be mentally draining, at least with actors, and I know comedians. My God, the bitterness, the jealousy. You know what I'm saying? The infighting. You know what I mean? How do you navigate going from one actors that are pretty bad?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? To comics that just seems like another level. You know?
Well,
because I mean, we're acting technically, you get a hierarchy just because, you know, you're trained, not trained, you know what I'm saying? Booked, not booked, you know what I'm saying?
booked, not booked.
Yeah, that becomes a, you know, different levels of hierarchy, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But with comics, you could be at the top of the game and comics could decide that you're not funny. And that becomes the kind of I guess reality of it, you know what I mean?
Comics saying you're not funny or like you mean
well, just I mean comics own how do you deal with the navigating the energy and keeping yourself still pushing forward. You know what I'm saying? The energies that are around, you know, they're both treacherous territories. Actors and comics are both treacherous that you could be like, oh man, let me just go back to PG, man. You know what I mean?
Let me give up.
You know, well, not give up, but I know what you mean. Like, man, I can have an easy life, you know what I mean? And not have to deal with all this negativity in my brain, you know?
It's the people that you surround yourself with. Like, you kind of find your people in whatever you do, I would say. And I felt like I had that in Chicago, and I had to find it in New York, and it just so happened to be with comedians. And the people that are like my close friends in stand up, you find like a lot of comedians, the comedians will give you your first job. They're like where you get paid. Cause when you start off, you don't get paid. And you just like, you say, hey, this guy's funny. If you're fun, your talent is your currency in a lot of ways. Sometimes there's people that, you know, they get somewhere because their friends got them there. I mean, that's in any business. So it's just, you just kind of have to realize, like, and then I'm connected to the real world too, because I have a day job. Chicago kind of taught me that too, where it's like, you see this guy kill on stage. That's a beast in a show. And then you see him like working somewhere. Like the guy might be working at Home Depot. That's just Chicago. Yeah. That's like a Midwest thing. So I just kind of took that work ethic and just like, I work my day job. I get to tell jokes for 20 minutes after I get off work. I get to go do this set. So I'm not going to waste it. And just try to be funny and not be afraid to fail.
Yeah,
it's different in theater, because where you just kind of, you fail in rehearsal. You could say, like, the director will say, no, I don't like that choice. Try something else. We'll figure something out. And then by the time the show opens, it's just like, okay, yeah, you got it. And expound on that. But with stand up, you fail in front of people. And you fail in front of that audience, and
you don't know if it's funny until you get in front of people.
Right, right. And you can go to open mics where it's like you're not getting paid. You might have 5 minutes to work on something, and you kind of see where the laughs are, and you listen to the tape and switch it up. And if I was getting ready for a big show or something, like if I'm opening for Bill Burr, I know I'm open for Bill Burr in a month. I got the date. So I'm working on, until the time I get the date and I'm working on that set. I'm working on the material that I'm going to do when I'm opening for him. And for him, for Bill Burr or any big comic that I'm opening for, it's just another night for them because they're the headliner. But for me, it's like, I got to show and prove. Like I really got to hit. I'm doing 15. And then you just do what you do and just not be afraid to fail. And then when I'm headlining somewhere, if I'm doing a road gig in upstate New York, I would just prepare, you know, you just prepare and just work the material until you're just ready to exist on stage and just really one of the dangers is just like not being in the moment. You really have to deliver the material and just fulfill the demands of your material. Like you do it with the script, you know, like I got to yell here. It's the same thing. It's just a different outlet.
Got you. And does your training help you with that? Learning Shakespeare?
Yes, it does.
Come up about rhythm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because it's like you have to if you know you have to yell like where you're if you're coming, you have to. I know I got to hit this note. So I got to prepare myself to hit that note. Or if
is that something that you could teach? Is that something that is even possible to teach? Like how to prepare for?
There are comedy classes. I never took them. I just kind of said, like, I'm in debt for theater. I'm not taking any classes. I went to an open mic and got on stage and said, I'm going to say this, this, and this, and I'm going to figure it out. you know, I would just figure it out in front of the crowd. And
no, I was just thinking, you know, it might be interesting just as another pathway if actors learn the skills that they're learning. How is it transfer to different things like comedy?
You know, I think some of them try to do that. Some of them do that in L.A. I hear they say, oh, this guy's trying to be an actor. They think it's easy to get into stand up, to do acting, and they to get into acting by doing stand up. And it's
like rappers becoming actors
in a way.
Yeah. Interesting. No, I'm just talking about, you know, when you think about your talent, you know what I'm saying? And you guess like there's different ways to diversify yourself. There's ways.
Definitely.
Know? And what are the skills that translate, you know?
Yeah.
You know, if you're interested in something like this, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's
like, you know, what speaks to me is that you say honesty, you know what I'm saying? And rhythm and how rehearsal was good for you, how you prepare, you know what I'm saying? And the way you do it, you know what I'm saying? It's not character. It's just a heightened sense of yourself. You know what I'm saying? All that stuff, you know, speaks to me because I go, oh, wow. You know, I hadn't really thought about it being that similar. You know what I mean?
Because most people, like, I have an album out. I have I put something out during the pandemic. It's called Failed Running Back. And it's just about 25 minutes of material that I put together just to put out there in case I got COVID and died. So I'd have a barcode of,
wow, something. That's dark.
Well, I mean, because I was going to do an hour like before the shutdown. Like I wanted to do a full hour, full 45, 50 minute set, but everything got shut down and I didn't get to do it. So I was like, let me put this out and people get a bit of who I am. Like if you listen to it, it'll be like that. That's Chris. You know, I didn't know he could do that. Some people will say, I didn't know you could do that. And I didn't know you were a comic. Right. I didn't know you were funny. But it was just, it's just another aspect of.
Good. Of who I am. It's on iTunes? What's it on iTunes?
It's wherever you stream and download music. Gotcha. Yeah, it's there. So that was like 11. That was like, I started in 2009. So it's been like 11, 12 years. And, it's been good, man. It's something that I had always wanted to do, but just kind of just suppressed it, you know, out of fear. Yeah. It was just out of fear. That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I watch comics all the time and I watch the game and you know what I mean? And it's kind of like golf for me. You know, I take up golf, you know what I'm saying? It was like, man, you know, as directing is, anytime I see a drama, you know what I'm saying? Technically, I'm working and I don't know if I want that. You know what I'm saying? So golf, I was like, you'd be like, do you want to be a professional golfer? And I was like, no, I enjoy it, actually. And I couldn't imagine doing this to eat.
Yeah.
Like if I got to eat and do this, I'm sure it's going to ruin some of my fun.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's something to challenge for myself because now I'm like, it's a different kind of focus. It's a different kind of. A level of it, right? So even though I love great storytellers and I love comedy and I watch it probably every day, you know, to be honest. I never thought about taking the leap into it, you know what I'm saying? Just because I enjoy it so much and I enjoy people who've done it well that I'm sure that, you know, when you do it, you know, it's harder to enjoy it now because you're watching what people are really doing now, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? You're watching how it lands.
Yeah. When you watch somebody, but it's like I try to remember to be a fan. And I don't think I've lost that. Cause like I'll watch some of these movies that these people are, the Oscar content. Like I was watching, Judas and the Black Messiah when it first came out. And I saw it when it first, you know, like it hit like 3 a.m. I woke up early and I was like, let me just watch this. You saw it, right?
Yeah. I saw it.
So that's the last speech that Daniel Kaluuya gives. I was moved
in the church.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was like, God,
it's the best I've ever seen him. To be honest, it's the best I've ever seen him.
Yeah, it is. I think he's always
the best work I've ever seen him.
Yeah. He's a super talented guy. But this role was, I was just like, That moved me. And I was like, I'm glad I can feel that. Like, I'm glad that, you know, because you got to put all that bullshit aside, like that bitterness and all that stuff. Like, I try not to be that dude. So mm-hmm. I'm secure. I try to be secure enough in myself to say, well, that dude got a shot and he rocked it. That made me feel something. And I like, maybe I can play his brother in a movie. Shit. You know, I don't care, man. I was like, I will drive Michael B. Jordan to the airport to see his girl in a rom-com.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you got to do what you got to do to get what you want. And it's nice to stay humble. Right. Yeah. And it's nice to, I mean, because it gives you perspective. You know, and to be a working artist is a special thing, I think.
Yeah.
Especially in today's time.
It is, man. It is. And it's I'll just close it off by, like, you know, really looking back, man, you guys filled in a lot of gaps that I didn't have. And I'm quite sure other people too, because it was just, you think about that stuff where you're not getting everything, and you see some other, I don't know if you experienced it in grad school either, or just in your coming up, where some other people were favored and more favored, and they were white. And it's just like,
I was, is like, it any different in the real world?
No.
So some people are favored and they're white.
Yeah.
It's not different.
So I just felt,
I mean, armed. It shouldn't, yeah. It shouldn't be different because you're paying for that. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So it shouldn't be, but
yeah, I just felt like I was really well armed. When I left Chicago, it was just like I was ready. Good. Like it was just like, because the whole thing for education is just like, I don't want to shit the bed when I'm given the shot. I had I did a couple days on this Melissa McCarthy movie a couple years ago, and I remember the first time on set, and I finally go on set, and she says, "I'm Melissa," and I was like, "I know who you are." You know what I mean? I was thinking she was a sweetheart. She asked for me to take a picture with her before I could even think about it. But like, it was just like, this is what we play for. This is, and being on set with these people that you grew up watching, and you just like, all right, well, let's rock. Let's make something happen. Right. So I think Chicago did that, man. It's, you know, I did too, but you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm honored to be a part of it, man. Part of your story.
Yeah, brother. Can you plug anything that's going? Oh, let me ask you this. What do you think? When do you think all this is coming back? Theater, at least.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they say the fall.
That's right? What I've heard too. Yeah.
They say the fall, but I think we're going to be seeing the effects of this through 2023.
Mm.
You know,
that's later.
I mean, we're gonna be wearing masks and stuff for at least another year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, and that's the truth about the situation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And are you excited about being in a group in a theater with a group of people?
No, me neither. I go to work for my day job a couple times, one or two times a week. But and I was saying to myself, and I've been auditioning for stuff, I'm like, if I book something, I'm going.
Yeah.
You know, like, I've been going to my day job. I'll go. I'm going.
But I mean, the thought of sitting in a theater.
Yeah, that's
with a bunch of strangers.
Yeah.
I think it's going to take some time for people to get comfortable with that.
I turned down two stand up gigs from the best clubs in New Jersey within a week. During the, you know, when there was no pandemic, it would be hard to get on. And now that nobody is like, Chris, can you come down? It's like, no, I'll wait till I get vaccinated.
Yep.
Yeah. It ain't worth
it. Man. Yeah. I mean, it's a tricky time, you know, and that's why we got to find other things. And luckily you've been doing this for a while, and you got this stream, and then and comics are some of the boldest out there doing new stuff. But I'm not super excited about returning to a theater right now, you know, because I want that intimacy, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I want to be in a room together, and then, you know, now it's like you know, you got to consider what people's lifestyles are just to be in a room with them. You know, it's I don't know if I want you going over to Johnny's house telling my kids. It's like, I don't know if I want you to go over to Johnny's house because Johnny, I don't know what his parents are doing and who they got coming over there. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what their life is like. Mm-hmm. So you stay over here. Let Johnny do his thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. True.
So then you're in a group of 600 people.
Yeah.
Who could all be making questionable choices.
You have given me the latest date time frame. And every time somebody gives me a later date, I'm like, that sounds about right. Every time somebody gives me a date later than expected, because I was talking to my manager today. He was like, probably the fall. And I was like, all right. And then you were like, probably 2023. I was like,
well, what I'm saying is that things will open up in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be back to normal until 2023.
I can see that. Yeah. I think I'm trying to think the Met here in New York, they were saying around the fall, and they were closed for, you know, and that was months ago when they said that. And I was I get it. I totally get it. But I think
it's going to take time for people to get back into the swing of things. So in the fall, people ain't going to just go running back to theaters.
No.
It's going to take some time.
They don't even want to go to the movie theaters. And I don't either. Like, the biggest test, I love movies. The biggest test for me was Tenet. And when I saw it, finally, I bought it on Blu-ray. And I was like, I'm kind of glad that I didn't risk it.
Yeah, because he was being real funny about it. He was like, nah, it's meant to see it in the theater.
Yeah.
And then I saw it and I was kind of like, I could have saw this on my.
Yeah,
that's fine.
I didn't hate it, but it was just kind of like, I'm glad I didn't risk my life. You know.
Yeah. Exactly.
Some people were meaner than me, but like, I was like, I'll see it again. I mean, I bought it, so, you know.
There are things that the digital world that we will, that I think will stay. I don't know if I'll ever go to another in-person meeting.
God, dude. That's what everybody's saying. Yeah, that's what everybody's saying. They're, like, the grind for me, because I don't live in Manhattan proper. I live right across the George Washington Bridge and here in Hackensack. My day job's in Westchester, and when I would get auditions, I would be in Westchester. I'd have to commute an hour into the city, sometimes the Wall Street area, to go to auditions, pay for parking, sometimes just to do like two or three lines for a co-star part, and then drive another hour to go back to Jersey. It's just like, hey, we can do this on Zoom. We could do an EcoCast, you know?
Yep. Any meeting now, it's like, I ain't got to travel through that traffic. Just Zoom me in.
Yeah.
Hey, y'all. Here we go.
Yeah, man.
I don't know. And then somebody said, no more snow days.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. When it snows out, they just shut down the office and everybody works remotely with my day job. Yeah. We shouldn't have to go up there. Yeah. All right, man. Well, is it anything that you can plug or you're doing or you are whatever you want to plug, you know,
I don't have anything. I got a lot of things building right now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I'm excited about a lot of opportunities that are on the verge of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, I can watch
Giving Voice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely watch Giving Voice. It's on Netflix.
Yes.
You know, and the students are, if you want to be inspired, it's one of those things that you won't leave that inspired.
Right.
You know, and fulfilled, you know, it fills you up, you know. So definitely go see that. That's what I would say.
Great. Derek, this has been awesome. More than I could have imagined. So thanks so much for doing it. I appreciate you. Everybody, we'll talk to you next time.